Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories and events in Central Ireland. I'm Kay Potter, your host for today, together with my co-host Stephanie Schubert.
Hello, thank you for having me with you today, Kay.
Well, thanks for joining me, Stephanie. Our subject today is responsible dog ownership, and in this program, we'll be concentrating on the first step in dog ownership, the one at the absolute beginning. We'll be looking at the different ways there are to find a dog to adopt, whether you want to adopt a puppy or an older dog, a mutt or a purebred. And we'll look at some of the possible concerns in the process of adoption, the areas that prospective dog owners should be especially alert to. But let's start with a very brief conversation I had with a dog owner at the Ames Dog Park. So that's a very nice-looking little dog you've got there. Is that a special breed?
Yes, his name's Luki. He's a Japanese Chin.
He's lovely. Where did you get him?
I got him at the Siouxland Humane Society in Sioux City.
So he was a rescue dog?
Yes, he was a rescue. He was abandoned. I got him when he was 8 years old. He's blind in one eye.
Oh.
His right eye.
It's not obvious. Do you know what his history was?
After getting blinded in the one eye by a cat, his family's one-year-old toddled up on him on his blind side and scared him, and he lashed out, and the family dumped him after that at the shelter. But he's just the sweetest little thing.
Would you ever get a dog from a pet shop?
No.
Why not?
Because you don't know the history. I don't like to not know about the dog's parents or where it came from, or especially how or where it was bred. Too much of a chance of it coming from a puppy mill or just an irresponsible breeder.
Well, he looks like a very nice little dog.
Oh, he's
and
a sweetheart.
How old is he now?
He is 10 now.
Okay.
Had him 2 years.
In one respect, that was typical of most of my dog park interviews. Nearly all the people I spoke to at the dog park said they got their dog from a shelter or from a specific rescue program. And indeed, many animal organizations and animal lovers agree that rescue is an excellent and morally responsible way to find a good pet.
This reminds me of my conversation with Lisa Keel, who is the head of the Iowa Coalition for Pet Adoption. I talked with her on this subject, and she says there is a serious overpopulation problem in animal shelters, and that each year in the United States, 4 million companion animals die in shelters while waiting for adoption. Lisa says shelter animals have a reputation for being damaged, but that is not true. They may have been mistreated by a previous owner or not trained properly.
Yes, and in that brief conversation at the dog park, Luki's owner also touches on many of the other issues we'll be covering today, such as how concerned one should be about knowing the history of the dog you adopt, and in the event that you want to adopt a purebred dog, knowing how to find a responsible and knowledgeable breeder. You probably also noticed that Luki's owner used the loaded term puppy mill. This is a pejorative term which is often used very loosely to cover many very different kinds of dog breeding facilities. The USDA points out that Iowa currently ranks number 2 in the nation, with between 220 and 230 USDA-inspected and approved dog breeding operations. Many animal rights advocates use this number when they refer pejoratively to the establishments that they refer to as puppy mills in Iowa. Today, as we talk to our various guests, we'll attempt to cast some light on this controversial topic and to unpack a bit this term puppy mill. All of our guests today are people concerned in various ways with dog breeding.
One of the guests who will be sharing her insights today is Erin Frost. Erin is the assistant training director of the Des Moines Dog Obedience Training Club, a volunteer for Illinois Doberman Rescue, and a member of the Doberman Pincher Club of Greater Des Moines. Erin trains and shows Dobermans, but she says she's not ready to breed them yet, because she doesn't want to breed until she can breed the best dog she possibly can. We'll also hear from Rex Myers, who, along with his wife Deb, runs the dog breeding facility known as Century Farm Puppies, which is just outside Grundy Center, Iowa. Rex originated the breed of dogs he calls Cavachons, which is a very popular small breed, a hybrid first-generation cross of a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and a Bichon Frise. We visited Century Farm and will share with you what we found. I also spoke with Dr. Robin Stuck, one of Rex's veterinarians, who cares for the dogs at Myers Century Farm, and I'll summarize what she had to say about this facility. And we will hear from Mindy Callison, an animal rights advocate and the founder of an organization called Bailing Out Benji, which is active here in Ames.
But first, let's hear a bit more about rescue dogs. We'll be hearing more from Erin Frost later, but here's what she has to say on the topic of adopting a rescue dog.
There are a couple different types of rescue. Purebred rescue typically runs through the National Breed Club because they'll run a national rescue. You also have several breed-specific rescues who specialize in that breed. I volunteer for Illinois Doberman Rescue Plus. We do mostly Dobermans, but we also take in any breed in need, but we focus on Dobermans. That is another way to actually obtain a purebred dog without having to quite do the same research that you would need to do through a responsible breeder. That, and you're actually supporting a great cause when you adopt a dog. When they come through rescue, they're all up to date on their vaccinations. They've typically been in a foster home, so their little behavior quirks or their temperament is usually pretty well documented, so they can tell you what to expect. I mean, you can get a puppy through rescue all the way up to a senior dog. You can get a dog at a life stage that's perfect for your life at that point in time.
If you can get an older, sedate dog if that's what you want.
Oh, absolutely. We work a lot with a lot of all-breed rescues in the Midwest where they might get a random Doberman being turned in either as a stray or as an owner turn-in, and they'll transfer them to us simply because we have the Doberman experience.
You mentioned they've been in foster homes. These are volunteers who will take these dogs and sort of train them a bit more if they need it and make them more adoptable, as it were. But sometimes rescue dogs are people who've been responsible pet owners and they maybe got too old or they're moving or for some reason they need to move that dog on. So they're often a dog, or they can be a dog that's been well cared for most of its life. And
more often than not, the dogs that we get, they're not problem children. They're just really not.
That was Erin Frost of Illinois Doberman Rescue, and we will be hearing more from her later. Let's move on to our visit to Century Farm in Grundy Center. The facility owned by Rex and Deb Myers, the home of Century Farm puppies, and the original home of the Cavachon breed. So how did you feel when we first pulled into the lot of Century Farm puppies, Kay?
Well, I was impressed that it looked exactly almost as idyllic as they make it sound on the website. There's a pretty little pond or lake there. There's a boathouse beside the lake. There was a boat pulled up, and Rex knew we were coming, and he had two quite large pens out on the grass with two litters of adorable puppies playing in them.
And there was a little group of dogs of all sizes that came to greet us as we pulled in our car.
Yeah, they're pet dogs.
Very well manicured, well kept.
From the outside, certainly. And
yes,
when we moved a little bit around, talking about the dogs and so on, we got close to one of the buildings and there was a sound. As we got close and the dogs either smelled us or heard us or both, we heard this barking. And at that point, I asked to see inside that building and was told no at that point. But we'll get to that later. But let's hear now what Rex said as we drove up and he met us.
Yeah, I'm Rex Myers, and we run Century Farm Puppies in Grundy Center, Iowa. We've been here on the farm here for 124 years, so it's not like we're going anywhere. Way back when, Mother started with Golden Retrievers. Then I went to the Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, and I crossbreed them with a Bichon, started a new breed 18 years ago. And they're now the number two most registered dog in the United States by the American Hybrid Club for the last 5 years, and the number one dog in Australia. We've got them in 49 states and 35 countries. And it's basically their personality and temperament.
Are you saying you invented this breed?
Yep, I started cross. Everybody wanted a Cavalier, but they can't have them because they're not hypoallergenic. By crossing them with the Bichon, the offspring are always non-shedding and hypoallergenic. And so I got them registered with the American Pet Registry and the American Hybrid Club and started a new breed.
Okay.
I should have patented them because now they're the number two most registered hybrid dog in the country. So that's what we do. My wife and I, my son and my oldest daughter-in-law, and my granddaughters, my youngest son and his wife farm the ground. So this way I get to see all the grandkids all the time because they're always here playing and working with the puppies. So we put money in the kids' college funds every month. And so the puppies kind of support college. puppies go out and play in the afternoon in the playpen out front here where they got...
Yeah, we can see some little dogs out in a pen out here on the grass.
Then we put the shade tree up under the shade tree so they got shade more in the summer. The kennels all got central heating, central air conditioning, fresh air exchangers, tenderfoot flooring, fiberglass flush system, automatic waters and feeders. And so they get all that special.
Do the adult dogs ever get out here?
Sure. Yeah, they'll come out over here.
Okay. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, they're cute. They're adorable.
Yo, 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 yo! Yeah. These are all the mommies and daddies.
The building Rex is showing us in that recording is the one where he keeps his females who are whelping and also the mothers with young litters. The dogs all look clean and physically well cared for, and we could pet them a little through the bars of their pens. You might say that these are the farm's luxury dog quarters, and Rex seemed proud to show them to us. Though at this point, he refused to let us get even a glimpse into the other building where he keeps the largest number of his dogs. After seeing the luxury quarters, we went into the office and spoke for a while with Rex and his wife, and both Steph and I were favorably impressed with their apparent knowledge of dog breeding and by the many things Rex told us about his operation. For the sake of transparency, we were also both anxious to see into that other, slightly mysterious building, particularly since we knew that Mindy Callison, the animal rights advocate and the founder of Bailing Out Benji, had found this mysterious building to be the most suspicious part of Rex's operation. And certainly, Rex and Deb did seem to be a bit defensive about this building at first. After we'd eventually seen into this building, we decided that the only really significant difference between it and the luxury quarters was that the mystery building had a great many more dogs. And it did seem that the area of their operation where Rex and Deb Myers were the most defensive centered on the number of dogs they have and how that number relates to the amount of help they have on the farm. And the mystery building did hold the great majority of the approximately 150 dogs at Century Farm. This is the building that Deb Myers described to the activist Mindy Cullison of Bailing Out Benji as the honeymoon suite. Rex used the same term to us. He did eventually let us see inside the building after we'd asked three separate times during the course of our visit. Here I am asking for the first time.
That way it's easier here.
I heard dogs barking in there. Can we go in there?
That's the honeymoon suite.
Can we go in there?
I got my male and female up there being bred, but they have it inside just like this, inside of that building, where they got heating, air conditioning,
could
and all
that. Could we see in there?
No.
After we talked about a number of other things, I asked again, with the same reply. This is what people say, that they say that there's certain places they won't let you see. I can understand you're worried about disease, but I just hope that you let us open the door and just let us peek inside.
I think that is where the problem is.
Finally, after a further talk, he agreed to let us see inside. When we finally get to see inside, you'll hear a lot of barking when the big doors are finally opened. I edited most of the barking out, but you'll still hear a bit of it, just to give you the atmosphere.
Okay, so it seems to be that the controversy that you're facing with your farm is that the issue of transparency. You have two large buildings. Mm-hmm. There are some dogs that we cannot see. So we, as the public, the question is, how can we trust that they're being treated right? And so what we understand from you is that it's a very serious health issue. There are a number of diseases and things that we could bring in.
All breeders are state inspected, right. USDA inspected, so we have USDA inspectors check to make sure everything's size-wise, friendly, dogs clean teeth, clean ears, friendly.
Yeah, but there are farms that fail their USDA inspections.
Most of those inspections that failed was because they didn't date a paper. They weren't home the day they showed.
Okay, but I think what Stephanie is getting at here is there some way, I mean, our motto at KHOI is building community through communication. Is there some way that you can improve communication about your facilities to get rid of some of these misunderstandings? That's what we're asking. That's why I'm asking you to let me have a peek, or if there's a window, okay, let me have a better look inside that building that's a bit mysterious over there.
Okay. Yeah, you can. We'll go around the other side, and you can go. Uh-huh. You can look in. You just can't go inside,
fine,
but I can open the doors.
That.
And you
yeah,
can look in.
I can understand. We're going over to the buildings, which he calls sundowner buildings, which are backup buildings.
Show your machine sheds. My wife, I had the door open. My wife says, why'd you open that door? I said, because they think we got dogs in every building.
No, we just want transparency. We want to say we saw every building on the place.
That's it, yep. That's the
room. This is called a machine shed.
Okay.
This building is a machine shed, and there are, in fact, many giant tractors in this machine shed. I don't see any dogs.
That's a house. That's a shop. Down in Missouri, they use these buildings called sundowners. And down in southern Missouri and Arkansas, where it's warm, they work. But they don't work up here in the cold country. So by putting them inside of this building, then I don't get the draft, the cold air, and we've got air conditioning and heating in them, so they work as backup units up here.
Oh, okay, so those are the
this
breeders.
Is the,
this is generally...
This is the honeymoon suite.
There's a bees through there, and they get sunlight. They have high output fluorescent lights are on in there all the time, so it's bright as day.
So they both in those. They have a little outside and a miniature outside and a miniature inside.
Yes, and the bigger dogs have double pens. We take the partition out between them so they can go in one door, out the other door,
oh, okay.
And have double
pens. That's what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, because these are designed for Maltese and Yorkie little dogs.
Gotcha.
These dogs are bigger. They need more space. So we make it that way. According to USDA, that's plenty of room.
Thank you. This has been an enlightening tour. We've gotten to see all the dogs in the mystery building.
Well, it's not like running around your living room or anything or your backyard. And this is for my retired dogs and my growing up puppies. So, yes, people may think, oh, you have a lot of dogs, but there's a lot of people here. It's my wife and I, my son and daughter-in-law, my five granddaughters, my full-time hired man. So there's a lot of us here, and that's all they do every day is play with puppies.
Later, when Stephanie and I were doing a brief follow-up phone interview with Rex Myers, I asked him to clarify a bit about the help he got from his grandchildren. Rex, and can I just, how old are your grandchildren?
My grandchildren range in age from 3 years old to 24 years old.
And do any of them work full-time at the kennel, or just they just come and play with the dogs when they're there, or how does it work?
They only live a mile and a half away, so they come and play with the puppies usually every other day. The littlest ones do. Mm-hmm. My older, the 19-year-old, she's working for us this summer, and then she'll be going to college this fall. I have my son, two sons, and two daughter-in-laws that help. I have a full-time hired man.
So when we were there, we could hear the roar of the dogs as the mm-hmm. we watched through the opening of the shed.
Yeah, it was
and,
a big like farm building where you might keep tractors, but inside were the what he calls his sundowner buildings, which are buildings which would be outside in the south, but he had them inside this other building, and each one had its own little run. Each dog had his own, or each set of dogs had their own.
In each
sort of, if you can call them trailers, in each trailer, there were two tiers with five pens in each tier. And each of those pens had what you might call an inside and an outside. In other words, the dog could come out of its living quarters to poop in the outside run. But the whole thing, of course, was inside, and except when the doors were open, then there was a sense more of an outside.
So it looked like there was part of the pen was wire and part of was not wire.
It's possible, but we couldn't see inside the back part of the pens. I think he would have mentioned it if it was different. He did mention that the whelping mothers move into special quarters 2 weeks before they have their puppies. And there's especially extra heat, and they've got carpet flooring in the whelping box.
And yeah. How he exercises these dogs is each section of dogs, right, has a turn to run inside the greater building.
Right.
So it's a very, it's like a giant, huge
Bomb.
Garage
yeah.
that is a dirt floor.
Yeah.
And they get to take turns running
Right.
And he'll open the door so the...
Yeah, and he did say, just talking in general, that his hired man, as well as his grandchildren and his girls, as he put it, will take turns exercising the dogs and running the dogs. And he was pretty honest about that. He said the cutest dogs and the best behaved dogs got the most exercise. So it's a little bit of a vicious circle there that, you know, the dogs that have got more problems get less exercise. But there were 10 pens in each trailer.
Right.
And most of those... Steph and I disagreed a bit about this, or we had slight different impressions.
At least 1 to 3 per pen.
Yeah, but they didn't look overcrowded. They looked as if they enjoyed the company. There was an average of 2 to 3 dogs in each pen.
They were all very lively and very
And they looked
well
clean. Yeah. There was a very strong smell of urine when the doors were opened. I suppose that's inevitable when you've got unneutered male dogs, you know, with females around, and they're marking their territory.
Right. He also said that he was reluctant to show people the second building because he has come under fire being misrepresented on the internet. He says activists can lie on the internet because the internet is a medium which is obviously has no regulation. We had to spend some time to convince him that we were, in fact, from a real radio station.
Yeah, we had to show him a radio station on the web.
In a follow-up phone conversation, I asked Rex Myers to give me his definition of the term puppy mill in his own words. Here's what he said.
Puppy mill is somebody that's not licensed or inspected by USDA or the state. Nobody knows they're there. They're not regulated by anybody, and they can do anything they want. Licensed kennels are inspected by USDA or state inspected for check the dogs for their health, their eyes, their ears, their teeth. They check all the pens and make sure the dogs are all happy, friendly, and in good shape.
What do you say to people that define a puppy mill as any large-scale operation of producing puppies?
Oh, that would be just like somebody saying, you do daycare in your home. How can you take care of that many children?
Though if you said daycares don't often have 100 children in their house, they usually have
right.
about 10.
Right, but they'll have several people there watch them. We have many people at our place, too. It's not just one person or one couple.
What would you say would be the highest number that you think you have ever had?
Oh, usually we have about 100 adult dogs. We have some young ones growing up and some older ones that are retired. But I think last USDA report showed 155 dogs.
And that is something that Lisa Keel agreed with me when we were talking about this issue. She said, you know, if I could be assured that there were definitely enough people to, in ratio to the amount of dogs, I would feel much better about large-scale operations.
Yeah, Rex Myers' farm certainly is a large-scale breeding operation. And he did mention that the only time he had trouble with USDA report was when he was sick with cancer. And that is a problem. He does have a full-time hired man who works only with the dogs. My overall impression is that this is no doubt a large-scale dog breeding operation. But of its kind, it seems to be well run. And I suppose my overall thought was, the puppies, they're the best cared for, and they're soon out of there. And Rex seems careful, at least with his cabochons, about getting them to pretty good homes. And he knows about what age they should be adopted and so on. It's the adult dogs that one could worry about. The adult dogs spend most of their life there. They're not pets. They are productive farm animals. I think that's the way to think about it. That's the way I think about it anyway. You know, I'd worry about those just as much as I might worry about hogs on a confinement. But people, you know, they tend to feel more attached to dogs. I suppose it's in our genes. Dogs and humans have been companions for thousands of years.
And that's something that the animal advocates raise as an issue, that the adult dogs, the puppies get to go to good homes, and then what happens to the adult dogs
right.
that are left behind?
But we would like to say we were impressed with a lot of things about Rex and his operation.
Mm-hmm.
All pups have buyers by the time they're 3 weeks old, but Rex keeps the puppies at the farm until they're 10 weeks old because, as he points out, they need their siblings, they need their mom, and so on. Buyers visit their dogs at the farm and play with them and get to know them.
Dogs are only bred once a year. They skip a breeding cycle, Rex does, when he breeds them, and he retires them from breeding after about 7 years.
And if I might do a little bit of self-disclosure here, because I don't want to give the impression that I've always been an absolute expert on dog breeding, which I certainly am not, and I do have the distinct impression that Rex is probably a more knowledgeable breeder than the person who bred my own beloved dog, Emma, my Newfie Emma. I just absolutely love my dog, but I realized before I brought her home that her breed had really didn't know much about breeding dogs well. But I'd fallen in love with Emma and I bought her anyway. However, another way to look at it is it's a very complicated issue. I'm pretty sure that the parents of my dog had a very happy life. I visited them at the farm. Some animal advocates would have called people that bred my dog, another derogatory term, they'd have called them a backyard breeder. And I would be more careful next time. I have big vet bills, but my dog's parents were happy, I'd say.
One reason Rex has a large number of dogs, he says, is that he retires his breeding dogs after about 7 years. He encourages people to adopt his retired dogs, and in fact, Mindy Callison of Bailing Out Benji adopted one of his retired female dogs. Another reason for the large number of dogs, he says, is he wants to be sure of having a large, diverse genetic pool.
Yeah, which is fair enough, although, of course, that's not the only way of doing it. You don't have to own all the dogs that you breed. One thing that surprised us, pleasantly, was hearing that Rex sells all his Cabochon dogs directly without using a third party or pet store. Mm-hmm. The dogs that he sends to Dyvig's pet store in Ames are a slightly different breed, a cross between a Cavalier Spaniel and a Shih Tzu. Here's what Rex told us about these dogs that he sends to the pet store to be sold.
So, just get this straight. Most of your dogs go directly to the owners.
We sell all of our Cabochons privately, direct.
Uh-huh.
We have little Bichon girls that are too small to breed to make Cabochons, and I breed them to a little tiny Shih Tzu called Teddy Bears, and we don't sell Teddy Bears, so those I send to the pet store. And Dale's the only pet store I send to, because Dale's a very clean pet store, very nice, and the puppies are never there more than a couple days, and they're home.
Now, wait a minute. Why don't you sell the little one, the Teddy Bears, as you call them? Why don't you sell those?
Because they're a cheap dog. We're known for Cabochons. I'd rather sell Cabochons.
We did invite Dale Dyvig of Dyvig's Pet Store in Ames to be interviewed for this show, but he declined. But Steph, this will probably be a good time to summarize the conversation you had with the veterinary surgeon for Century Farm.
Yes, I also talked with Dr. Robin Stuck, who is one of two vets that works with Rex Myers. Paula Kuffuff is the other one. She's semi-retired right now. I asked her what her definition of a puppy mill was. She said a puppy mill is a place where they breed every cycle until they die. It would also be a place where health issues are ignored, or birth issues, such as if a mother dog was in need of a C-section, was ignored because it costs money. She says that Century Farm puppies keep good records of breed pairs to make sure the genetic line is healthy, that Rex operates a very good large kennel. He does not hesitate if the female needs a C-section. He breeds every other cycle to maintain the health of the female.
Yeah, and Rex said the same thing to us. As I say, I was impressed with his knowledge of breeding. He really did seem very knowledgeable. And Steph checked with his vet. But now let's hear from the animal rights advocate, Mindy Callison. Mindy has a different, wider definition of the term puppy mill, as it is used by her organization. We should mention that we know almost nothing about the alleged puppy mill she mentions in this extract from our interview, although we did drive by Julie's Jewels in Jewel Isle.
Did we considered going in there to talk to them, but...
Well, we've done so much research on this place,
and
we won't go into the allegations, but we decided we'd stay well away. I should probably add about this interview with Mindy Callison that although we won't hear it today, in our original interview, Mindy did mention Century Farm puppies. What she chiefly objected to was the number of dogs kept at the farm and the fact that she wasn't allowed to see in one of the buildings, which we've already talked about. She said that Deb Myers referred to this as the honeymoon suite and she was romanticizing it. Mindy did also mention that she was able to adopt a retired dog from Century Farm. Here's part of my interview with Mindy. I'm here with Mindy Callison, who's a preschool teacher and who founded an organization called Bailing Out Benji.
Thank you for having me.
Well, would you like to start by telling us why you founded Bailing Out Benji and what exactly you do?
I started Bailing Out Benji 3 years ago when I was 21, And it was because I had never heard of these animals, like puppy mills. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know Iowa was the second worst state in the nation when it comes to puppy mills and other animal issues. And so when I started learning, I started writing articles for people like me who thought they were animal lovers and just didn't know
yeah.
to the extent of the problems we had here.
Now, when you say it's the second worst state in the nation, how do you know that? Is there some way of measuring that?
That's according to how many breeders we have, how many puppy mill USDA licensed breeders we have. Not every USDA licensed breeder is a puppy mill. I should start by saying that. But if you look straight on the USDA site, you will see that we have the second most number in the whole country. We are right behind Missouri. And so we have closer to 250, and Missouri has over 600.
And some of these puppy mills are labeled the worst puppy mills.
Yes.
So they sort of have degrees of badness, in other words. And we have some of the worst ones, I believe.
The Humane Society of the United States just released a report, well, of the horrible 100 list. And that's the 100 worst breeders in the whole United States. And Iowa had 6 of those.
And one of them is quite close to here.
Yep. One of them is Julie's Jewels. She is located about 25 minutes north of Ames in Jewell, Iowa. And she actually had her USDA license pulled a few years ago because she had horrible inspections, excessive feces. There were, in one report, there was like a dead rat in the cage. And at that last inspection, she tried to run her USDA inspector off the road. She threatened to shoot her dogs during the inspection.
So what exactly is a puppy mill?
A puppy mill, technically, there's no legal definition, so it depends on what organization you're talking to. But our organization believes that a puppy mill is any breeder who puts the profit over the welfare of the animals, and they're constantly breeding the animals in their care. Reputable breeders, they follow guidelines. They won't breed dogs too young, they won't breed dogs too old, and they never breed dogs every heat cycle. Puppy mills, on the other hand, when they get a puppy, the first time it goes into heat, they will breed it, and they will breed her every heat cycle until her body gives out. There's one breeder here in Iowa that has over 1,000 dogs on his property, adult dogs on his property.
Now, the puppies, they get out of here pretty quickly. It's the adult dogs that we really have to worry about, I believe. Because
yes.
They're there all the time.
Absolutely. Until their bodies give out. And
right.
Then some breeders will release adult dogs to rescue. But most do not because they're worried about the rescue speaking out against puppy mills.
Oh, I see.
So if a rescue were to get like 20 dogs in and they were in filthy condition, that's likely going to make the news or going to make Facebook and going to make headlines.
Right.
And so breeders are a little more hesitant to just release dogs. And so a lot of breeders, if they are done with a certain breed, they will sell it to another breeder. And so the dogs could be going to worse conditions. And then there's a whole nother area of the puppy mill world that people don't see in their dog auction, which is just like a farm auction where, you know, you've got machinery and people, it gets sold to the highest bidder. Well, what they do at these dog auctions is they will take all of these dogs that have been bred their whole lives and sometimes puppies that were just born or puppies that are old enough to be sold, 8 weeks or older, they'll put them on a table and they go to the highest bidder. And these dogs aren't always in the great condition. We've seen some where there were missing legs. They've had open wounds. It's pretty bad.
Well, what is the best way for dog lovers to respond to this kind of thing, to puppy mills? If they don't want to encourage puppy mills, what should any concerned citizen who wants to own a dog do? How should you get a dog?
Well, first of all, we always push for adoption. There are thousands of dogs and cats in shelters. And the statistic is that 25% of dogs that come into shelters are purebred. So there's a website called petfinder.com. And if you're looking for a Newfoundland, you will type in Newfoundland. You can type in your area code or your zip code, and it will show you all of the adoptable Newfies within, you can set it, a 50-mile radius, a 100-mile radius, a 500-mile radius. And these are all adoptable animals that are in shelters and rescues waiting for you.
Right.
So we always push for adoption first.
Yeah, and there are also rescue societies for the specific breeds,
yes,
like Labrador Rescue, Newfoundland mm-hmm. Rescue.
Absolutely.
For lovers of particular breeds of dogs.
Yes, yes. And most of those are on Petfinder, and if mm-hmm. not, you can always go to Facebook and look for breed-specific rescues on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
If you're set on finding a puppy, there are reputable breeders out there
right.
for puppies.
Right.
You just need to make sure it's a reputable breeder and make sure you're not supporting a puppy mill by going to the property.
That's always good advice, I believe, that you should, if you want a puppy, you should be sure to meet the breeder, meet the parents of the dog that you're buying.
Yes, and you want to make sure the parents have had health tests. That's one of the biggest differences between reputable breeders and puppy mills. Reputable breeders only breed what they consider to be their perfect dog. And I know reputable breeders that have fixed females or males that had a genetic disorder where they didn't feel were absolutely perfect to breed because they love that breed and they want to better the bloodlines. And there are instant problems of puppies that come out right away. They can have parvo and other diseases, but for the most part, the genetic diseases won't come out for years.
Yeah, and there are breed-specific disorders which, as you say, reputable breeders test against: heart, eyes, knees, the hips, and so on. Now, how about going to a pet store and getting a dog at a pet store?
The Humane Society of the United States, the ASPCA, and us at Bailing Out Benji warn people that pet store puppies are puppy mill puppies. 99% of dogs that go in, puppies that come from pet stores are from these puppy mills. And the reason there's 99% is because you haven't been to every pet store in the entire United States. But the ASPCA does say for a puppy mill to sell puppies, the breeder has to be USDA licensed. 10 years ago, people thought USDA license was like a security blanket. They thought it was safe. That means the government checked it out. It's okay. But we're finding that more and more, these laws that USDA licensed breeders just aren't following. And if they are following them, they're still not enough.
Could you give me an example of why it's not enough?
So take my black lab. What the USDA says is that you need to measure from the tip of her nose and add 6 inches, and the base of her tail and add 6 inches. And that's
for the confinement.
And that's how big her cage can be her entire life.
So it's very minimal.
Very, very minimal. But that's a common problem in all breeding facilities because these dogs, they don't legally, they don't have to be let out of their cages. That's not a law that the USDA or the Animal Welfare Act have these people follow. And so the dogs can live in their cages the entire time as long as the cages are a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
But if the cages are a little bit bigger, then they put more dogs in them. And so these dogs live in the cages every day, their entire lives. They never get to play. They never get to know human love. They never get to play on the grass. They are literally stuck in cages just to be bred, which is why that term puppy mill has caught on, because they are just churning out the puppies. It's all about profit. Reputable breeders actually do have guidelines they follow. They have, if you want a dog from them, often they require it be spayed or neutered. If you can't care for it for any reason, they want it back. They usually do a home visit because they want to make sure they love that puppy. They want to make sure it's going to a good home. And that's why everyone says pet store puppies are puppy mill puppies, because a reputable breeder would never sell through a third party.
Right.
They want to know where their dogs are
going. They do, yes.
And pet stores can sell to the first person who comes in with $500.
Yes, without knowing where the dogs are going. Yeah, a friend of mine who breeds Labradors, she has people coming. I mean, she had some people from Florida wanted one of her dogs. She would not put her dog on a plane.
Absolutely.
They had to come and pick up the dog. And she'll never sell one of her dogs to people that she hasn't met. So you want the best breeder you can get. So look carefully for a breeder, you would advise people. Never buy a dog from a pet store.
No.
How about getting a dog on Craigslist?
Craigslist is a little different, too. You've got the people who are giving away pets for free, which is absolutely dangerous because you don't know where they're going, especially intact dogs. An intact dog is a dog that is not spayed or neutered. And so if you put your unspayed or unneutered dog on Craigslist for free, that could, if it's purebred, could wind up in a breeding facility. Or Iowa has been known to have dog fighting rings. So any of your free pets could be shuffled into that life, too.
If you're looking for a dog, I suppose you could find a nice dog on Craigslist, but it's still something you shouldn't encourage. You shouldn't, because for the reasons you've mentioned.
There's some people called flippers out there, and they will take a bunch of free dogs or free animals, and they'll sell them at a profit later. And so in the meantime, a lot of these animals are just stuck in a house together, maybe in unsafe conditions. There have been stories, news stories all over Facebook and on news headlines about that. And so you'll get people who will just take your beloved pet that you have to get rid of for free, and they'll sell it later somewhere else.
So stay away from Craigslist. Although you could possibly get a nice puppy, it's just not something you want to encourage. Yeah. And certainly don't advertise your own dogs on Craigslist. That's not a good way to find homes for a dog. Don't use pet stores. Do you want to put all the pet stores out of business?
Absolutely not. There are some amazing pet stores within 50 miles of us. There's one in Brecky's. They only sell pet food because they're committed to making pets' lives better and not selling animals. There's another one here.
That's a wonderful place. They always welcome your dog if you take your dog.
Exactly. And they're very knowledgeable about their product.
They are.
And, you know, if you are wanting to switch foods, they will talk you through it. And they're an amazing pet store. But yes, there is another pet store here in Ames. They do sell small animals, but they don't sell dogs or cats. Local residents are always the ones who are angry with me and my organization. They tend to bring that pet store up often. But that owner, he refuses to sell dogs because he knows about the puppy mill problem here in Iowa. He and I have had several talks about that issue. And so he is committed to helping animals by mm-hmm. not selling dogs or cats in his store. There are pet stores in Des Moines that we support fully. Jet and Monkeys in the East Village. Actually, they got an award for helping so many homeless animals.
Mm-hmm.
The owner, Jennifer, will take in animals from rescues and she fosters them. She'll bring her fosters to work and then customers that are coming in will fall in love. They fill out an adoption form. They can visit the puppy until they're approved. And then they can take the dog home. And so that's an amazing business model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been trying to get other pet stores to do too, is to have those adoptable pets in their store because they're helping the local homeless animal problem.
So what would you like to emphasize before you go?
The Midwest is full of all of these states that have so many puppy mills that are hidden in the agriculture because it can be hidden. So when you know better and you can make informed decisions, you can help your friends, family, and coworkers make informed decisions, and then we will see this problem go away.
Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us today. I've been talking to Mindy Collison, who's founded an organization called Bailing Out Benji.
I feel a little anxious after hearing this interview. There are a couple things that come up for me. One, which I think Mindy did make reference to, was that it is important to say again that the USDA number of what it kind of fluctuates between 220 and 230 of licensed breeding operations. If you use the blanket term puppy mill for that, I think that's dangerous, especially for facilities like Rex's facility, which you can argue that he has a large number of dogs. It's about 150 dogs. And you can argue whether or not that's a responsible way if you have enough people to handle that many dogs. But to lump him in with images that are often put on activist sites that show dogs with matted hair and living in their own filth and basically abandoned.
Yeah, it gives a false impression to put an establishment with Rex on the same website. And if people aren't reading carefully, it gets lumped together in their mind.
Right.
Yeah, that's a problem with the web, maybe.
Not to say that it isn't a real problem. It really is a real problem. But there is also a spectrum there, I don't think.
Yes, but let's hear from our final guest, Erin Frost, who's a member of a local dog obedience training club, a volunteer for Illinois Doberman Rescue, and a member of the Doberman Pinscher Club of Greater Des Moines. Welcome, Erin. I'm so glad you could come.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, what I particularly like you to talk about is you're obviously interested in purebred dogs.
Yes.
And I'd like you to talk about purebred dog ownership and finding a responsible breeder of purebred dogs. I guess most people know that in terms of health, it's easier to get a healthy dog if you just have a mutt because you've got a nice genetic diverse pool there. Whereas if you want a purebred dog, and I love purebred dogs, I love Newfies and lots of other breeds, you do have to be more careful to get a healthy dog with good genes. So perhaps we could start with talking about that.
Most people start by saying, I like the look of that dog. But there's no real direction where to go in terms of where to find that breed of dog. So a good place to start to find a responsible breeder would be to contact your local kennel club. In our area, we have a few. We have the Central Iowa Kennel Club, and we also have the Des Moines Kennel Club. Another good place to start would be to look at the websites for breed registries. One is the American Kennel Club. The other one is the United Kennel Club. Both of those websites have links to national breed clubs for all of the American Kennel Club recognized breeds, as well as the United Kennel Club recognized breeds. A national breed club is the best place to start. The breed club on their website will talk about health, common health concerns within the breed. They'll also talk about temperament and expected behaviors, and they'll also talk about what that breed should look like. So by contacting a national breed club, you're on your way to finding a responsible, ethical breeder of a breed that you're interested in.
And also, I believe a breeder of a dog, if you get a dog from that breeder, they are a resource for you because they understand that breed well. I mean, further down the line, if you're having problems with owning that animal or training it, they can help you because they're an expert in that particular breed.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime you purchase from a responsible, ethical breeder, that breeder is going to be a lifeline for the life of your dog. And even past that, there's many times where I've come across a responsible, ethical breeder, either through my own dogs or through friends, and they become friends. It really becomes a great relationship. It's very useful.
And no responsible breeder would let a dog go to people they hadn't met.
Correct. And a lot of the ones that I know, they do want you to answer questionnaires that they have on their puppies. They want to make sure you have a very clear expectation of what this breed will do. For instance, you don't necessarily expect a Doberman to act like a golden retriever, because there are two different types of dogs and they're bred for specific purposes, and those purposes are not the same. So an ethical breeder really wants you to understand the pet that you're bringing home. They want to make sure that the home that they're putting that puppy, that they've put a lot of time and effort and care and money into, is going to a home that's going to love and keep it for its entire life. Right. And along the same lines, if something does happen in your life where you're no longer able to take care of that dog, they absolutely want the dog back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. What makes a responsible breeder, would you say?
A responsible breeder is one who has a goal in mind for what they want their dogs to be. One that includes making sure that dog looks the way it's supposed to look and acts the way it's supposed to look, as well as a concern for health. A responsible breeder should understand what health concerns are in their breed, test for those kind of conditions if a test is available, and screen pedigrees against who they're breeding their dogs to or what other dog they're bringing into their program to be used for breeding. Certain breeds have a predisposition to specific health concerns that we can screen out.
Right.
But a responsible breeder should be able to do all the requisite health testing for that breed, usually as outlined by the National Breed Club. They should be able to provide results upon request for puppies in that liver. Mm-hmm. So you can see what longevity is in the line, what possible health concerns they've had in the past, as well as you get an idea of what your dog should look and act like. Responsible breeders should be very interested in your home. They should be very interested in what kind of activities you do in your own home, so they can match the right puppy with your house.
So even within a specific breed or a specific litter, there might be dogs that are more suited for you than others in that same litter.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Individual personality comes out in litters. And if you're someone who's looking for a high drive prospect or a prospect that loves the work and the games, that puppy should go to you. It shouldn't go to a family that just wants a pet just to be the pet, just to live in their home and go on trips. That's not going to bode well for the puppy, and it's most definitely not going to bode well for the family. Mm-hmm. A breeder should be able to pick that puppy for you and say, this is going to be your best match. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, call me. Call me if you have questions.
Now, you're describing a situation here where the breeder knows every individual puppy really well.
Of course.
And there's a limit to how many dogs you can know like that. How many, for one breeder, how many breeding dogs would you say they should have? And how often should they produce puppies?
A responsible breeder typically breeds less than 3 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be breeding the male and female they have in their house together all the time.
Right.
That in itself is a red flag. They should be looking for the best.
Why is that?
Usually when someone owns the sire and the dam, in the same household and they're repeating breedings, they're usually only in it to make money. They're mm-hmm. in it to make puppies. They're not putting the care and time into health screening and showing and titling those dogs in venues that are appropriate.
And they're putting a lot of dogs out there that have a very limited genetic pool.
Exactly. They're also putting breeds out there where they're just selling a puppy. They let people come into their home and say, all right, I want that one. And they're like, okay. They don't think past the money, typically. Right. We want people to go to responsible breeders because it's a quality product. It sounds silly to compare them to the product, but when you think about adding a family member to your family for the possibly next 15 years, getting the best that you can get is well worth the time and effort to do so.
So you said a responsible breeder will breed 3 times a year.
Typically less.
Yes, typically less than 3 times a year. And they'll get to know those litters really well.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is really, this is a kind of care and attention and knowledge that is impossible from someone that has say, 100 dogs that they breed.
Correct. There's absolutely no way someone can put that much work and effort into 100 dogs.
Or get to know them all individually and say, this is the puppy for you, this particular puppy out of this particular litter. Mm-hmm. They couldn't possibly do that.
Exactly.
Now, you told me before that you are aiming to be a breeder, but you're not a breeder yet because you're not quite ready for that.
Correct.
Could you say a bit more about that?
Sure. I have a passion for dogs, and there's a lot of people in specific breeds that have quite the passion for dogs. I myself don't want to breed a dog until I can breed the best dog that I can possibly breed. I don't want to breed to make money. My goal is to make a better Doberman, not to make a bunch of money off of puppies that I don't feel like I did the best that I could do, mm-hmm. Especially in terms of genetic diversity, in terms of looks and behavior. I really want a really great foundation, female dog before I even consider bringing more dogs into our world. That's the kind of person that anytime you buy a puppy, that should be something that you kind of look for.
Right.
The puppies should be their number one concern as well as the health concerns of their breed. Without the care that we take with breeds as we know them, they just won't be breeds anymore. They'll end up extinct or they'll end up in completely different look and behavior than what's actually expected of them. And you don't want to get a puppy from someone who's making this as their moneymaker. When it's a moneymaker for someone, there's too many puppies to get to know all of them and socialize them correctly. And there's just not enough time to work their parents the way they should be worked. That's why a responsible breeder is typically less than 3 litters a year. Also, every show dog that I know is first and foremost a family companion.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just shown and kept in a kennel or shown and titled and then just put away somewhere. They're a member of the family. When you put that much work and effort into your family, there's really nothing in your mind that says I should make money off of my family member in that way.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Erin.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And once again, my guest has been Erin Frost. She is the assistant training director of Des Moines Obedience Training. She's also a volunteer for Doberman Rescue and a member of the Doberman Pinscher Club of Greater Des Moines.
But it's time we were wrapping up. What are your final thoughts, Steph?
Wherever you get your dog, whether it's the shelter or a breeder, whether or not they let you know what issues are happening with this particular dog or with are possible with the breed are important.
Yes. And in fact, my sister is always telling me that it's sort of not ethical to have purebred dogs at all. And she would never dream of having a purebred dog because mutts are much healthier. And basically that is true. Natural selection is operating with mutts, whereas we've got artificial selection with breeds.
So if you're from England, what about the corgis of the Queen? One of the arguments that seems to come out of this discussion that we've been having today is about the USDA and regulation in general.
Right.
Breeders like Rex, who follow to the letter, to the USDA regulation.
And beyond, I'd say.
And beyond, yes. And he's very proud of that. And people on the other side who would argue for more USDA regulation, and that could be a topic of its own for a whole show. There was a bill called SF2254 that was proposed to help increase regulation for USDA. It included increased cage size, solid surface for the cages, no wires, access to the outdoors, annual vet exams, and state oversight. This was a bill that did not pass, but they are hoping to reintroduce in the future. You've been listening to Local Talk today. Thank you for listening to our program on responsible pet ownership.
We've been talking to Erin Frost, Assistant Training Director of the Des Moines Dog Obedience Training Club and a volunteer for Illinois Doberman Rescue.
We've also been talking to Rex Myers,
who along with his wife Deb runs a dog breeding facility of Century Farm Puppies outside Grundy Center, and Mindy Callison, the founder of Bailing Out Benji, and also Dr. Robin Stupp, a veterinary surgeon who cares for the dogs at Myers Century Farm.
And thank you to Lisa Keel for submitting her views on animal advocacy as well.
You can listen to this show and all our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. You'll also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations and other resources mentioned in our show. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2978 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and
see you again on the radio.